Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Veterans are not all broke. But let me tell you, there's a lot of them who are struggling.
A new report shines a spotlight on the issues veterans face when returning home. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, September 30th, 2014. I'm Tiffany Walton.
And I'm Rocky Natha. The first Ebola case has been diagnosed in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The person was admitted to Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas and has been placed in strict isolation. Other American Ebola patients who have been treated in the States all contracted the virus while in West Africa. So far, the outbreak has killed nearly 3,000 people.
The Los Angeles Unified School District Board meeting today will discuss its upcoming performance of Superintendent John Daisy, who came under scrutiny from teachers' union and some board members. Sophia Lee joins us live. Hi, Sophia. What's going on at the meeting today? We're having some problems right now. We'll move on with that story.
Los Angeles Unified School District Superintendent John Daisy's testy relationship with the school board spilled into homeroom this morning. Matt Haller was on hand for a protest by teachers.
We are the teachers!
We are the teachers!
Mighty, mighty teachers!
Mighty, mighty teachers!
Teachers at Thomas Starr King Middle School in Silver Lake march for about two blocks around campus before first period begins. As messy-haired 12- and 13-year-olds trickle into class in front of him, United Teachers Los Angeles President Alex Caputo-Pearl describes the geographic scope of the protest.
All across the city today, our educators from Chatsworth to the harbor, from the beach to East LA, are in red in a show of unity behind the demands of the schools LA students deserve.
UTLA is currently negotiating with the school district for a 17% raise, while the district has countered with 2%. But the bigger question today was who exactly would be sitting across the bargaining table from UTLA in the months ahead.
I want to address another question that I'm sure is going to come up about John Daisy. John Daisy, in his 4 years here in Los Angeles, has been clear that all employees need to be accountable. What we are saying of John Daisy and the school board is that he himself needs to be accountable in the same way.
So what does that mean exactly?
When you say be held accountable, does that mean let him go?
We want to see a process where he is held accountable for the problems that he's caused.
So does that mean the board should essentially fire him, or?
I've said what I'm going to say on that.
School board members are meeting behind closed doors this afternoon to go over exactly how they'll evaluate Daisy at his upcoming performance review, scheduled for late next month. They'll have a lot to talk about. Daisy's flagship project, the $1.3 billion effort to equip every student in LA Unified with an iPad, rolled out with serious flaws. Students bypassed security safeguards, the educational software had hiccups, and teachers weren't exactly sure how to incorporate the technology into curriculums. And then the real bombshell hit. Last month, Daisy came under fire for conversations he had with Apple and an education software maker in the very early stages of the project's bidding process. Critics cried cronyism. Still, Daisy has his backers. Yesterday, a letter signed by business and civic groups like the LA Chamber of Commerce and United Way urged the board to retain Daisy. California Community Foundation President Antonia Hernandez was one of the signees. Her organization channels philanthropic funds to a variety of local initiatives, including education.
We think John has done a very good job, I mean, as far as dropout, improving graduation rates, dismissal rates.
Back at Thomas Starr King, students have some familiarity with iPads in the classroom. The school isn't part of Daisy's pilot project, but they have secured funding from other sources to use iPads for state testing and occasional classroom use. Principal Mark Newall says that iPads in the classrooms has some fans, at least among his pupils.
You know, this generation of students, they're very intuitive with technology, so they really embraced it pretty readily, and it's something they're familiar with. You know.
Daisy's contract runs through June 2016, but he can be let go with 30 days' notice. Matt Heller, Annenberg Radio News.
We've connected with Sophia Lee, who was at the district board meeting today. Sophia, hi. Can you tell us what was going on at the meeting today?
Yeah, the meeting just started, and there are about 40 people at the LAUSD headquarters right now for a special school board meeting. It's open to the public right now, but it will close to non-board members so that the school board can discuss John Deasy and his upcoming performance review.
What is anticipated from the meeting today? What should we be listening for and looking for?
Well, it's really unclear as far as the closed portion of the meeting. Business owners may be behind Deasy, but many school board members and the LAUSD Teachers Union, United Teachers of LA, certainly have many criticisms and many complaints. This morning, UTLA actually had a rally outside one of the LAUSD middle schools, and whether or not Deasy may be fired is completely up in the air, but right now it's just normal business for the school board meeting.
Okay, thanks so much for that information, Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
Construction on a nearly 2-mile metro line in LA's Little Tokyo neighborhood officially began today during a groundbreaking ceremony. The line will connect the Metro Blue and Expo lines to the Gold Line. The link is expected to be completed in 2020 and will make it possible for passengers to travel from Azusa to Long Beach. LA Mayor Eric Garcetti attended today's groundbreaking ceremony. He was joined by Star Trek actor George Takei, who emceed the event. Also showing support for the new Metro line was U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox. He highlighted the importance of transportation for the community.
And we do it because we often know that the way to a better job is literally the way to get to a better job. A subway station, a bus route, a light rail line can be the lifeline for a family, for a community.
At First Street and Central Avenue received $670 million from the Federal Transit Administration in February.
USC's Provost Elizabeth Garrett is Cornell University's next president. The announcement today surprised the USC community. J.J. Maldonado got reactions to the news.
Elizabeth Garrett is trading the sunshine of Los Angeles for the cold and snowy winters of Ithaca, New York. Garrett can now call herself the 13th and the first woman president of Cornell University. Selma Hollow, USC director of Fisher Gallery, says there was nothing that could have prepared her for the news.
Well, first, my heart stopped. Second, I was just thrilled for her. Third, I realized that Cornell is ready for a burst of incredible, brilliant energy.
Garrett began at USC in 2003, where she taught law until 2010, when USC President Max Nikias appointed her provost. Nikias praised her in a statement emailed directly to faculty and staff. He called her a remarkably dynamic leader, showing boundless energy and a singular gift for innovative thinking. He said she will be deeply missed at USC. USC student and campus tour guide Kimberly Osteler says this is a huge step for women in the Ivy Leagues.
I was definitely very surprised. I've met Provost Garrett. I'm a tour guide at USC, so I was able to give her a tour last year. She's a very nice woman, so I'm disappointed for USC's loss of that wonderful position of higher leadership, but obviously very excited for her in the future and for Cornell and its wonderful growth for female leadership in higher education.
Garrett will officially join Cornell University July 1st. USC's next provost and senior vice president of academic affairs has not been announced. J.J. Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Governor Jerry Brown signed the single-use plastic bag bill this morning. Iqbal Al-Saneya reports.
California is the first state in the nation to pass a ban on plastic bags. The law restricts stores from distributing single plastic bags and will charge a minimum of 10 cents for paper and reusable bags. 127 cities and counties have already adopted the bag ban, including LA and San Francisco. Sue Vang from California Against Waste says they've already seen a reduction in plastic bags on the streets and in coastal areas.
Nearly 10 million Californians' lifestyle plastic grocery bags is already a reality. And these bag bans reduce plastic pollution and waste. They lower bag costs at the grocery stores. And we're also seeing job growth in California at the facilities that produce better reusable alternatives.
The bill also seeks to protect and create green jobs by creating incentives for plastic bag manufacturers to make reusable bags. It will take effect on July 2015 for large grocery stores and 2016 for all stores. Iqbal Saner, Annenberg, Radio News.
Disasters can happen at any time and anywhere, including organizations we rely upon in emergencies. That's why Children's Hospital Los Angeles held its fifth annual Disaster Olympics today. The disaster drill competition was created to prepare hospital staff on what crucial steps to take in the event of an emergency. Hospital staff were tested in decontamination, dealing with power outages, waste management, and transporting wheelchair-bound patients through a stairwell, heard here.
Mom, you're okay?
Doing great.
Baby okay?
Baby good.
You're
gonna
turn?
Okay.
Dr. Jeffrey Upperton, Trauma Program Director and creator of the Disaster Olympics, says we have to take proactive measures in handling a crisis.
Well, since you never know, you always have to be prepared. And when we're in a natural hazard disaster area such as Los Angeles, you have to be ready for the unknown.
Children's Hospital has not experienced a large-scale disaster in recent years, but staff use this event to always be ready for an emergency. Everyone has a story of walking into the wrong bathroom. But as Hillary Jackson reports, the University of California is working to make going to the bathroom a little less awkward for transgender people.
I spoke with Karen Tongson, an associate professor of English and Gender Studies at USC. She knows what it's like to get stares when she walks into a public bathroom.
Somebody who comes in, who wears short hair, who doesn't wear particularly feminine clothing, into a women's restroom, there is this sort of paranoia or fear that I've sometimes met with, that I've entered the wrong place and that I'm somehow violating an inner sanctum.
She says most concerns about gender-neutral or unisex bathrooms come from women. Many say they worry about their own safety if guys can come in. And as politically incorrect as this might sound, some women think that men are just not as tidy in the stalls.
And so there is the idea that a woman could be isolated. A vulnerable female could be isolated in a joint gendered public restroom with someone male who might threaten her safety.
Women are also worried about their privacy.
And everything from grooming, cleanliness, and aesthetics, wanting to separate, having existed so long in a kind of separate gender system around certain private behaviors, particularly using the restroom. For some people, even for some cisgendered women, also taking care of their menstrual cycle or whatever in a public restroom, they feel less comfortable doing that, knowing that there are, people of the opposite gender in that same environment.
UC may have changed their policy. In fact, all schools in California must make bathrooms available to transgender students. But Tongson says it may take some time before gender-neutral bathrooms are found in most public spaces.
The fact that, there have been different legislative gestures in different sort of state environments that have shifted that separate gender paradigm around restrooms, I'm not sure that, if that would eventually fade away.
Kelby Harrison is the director of USC's LGBT Resource Center. She says there are already 15 gender-neutral bathrooms on USC's campus, but a lot of buildings still don't have them.
What about the buildings where there isn't a single stall restroom that can be changed? Like this building, for example, where we have our resource center. So it is a hub where trans students can come and hang out. But if they have to leave this building to use the restroom, that's a little uncomfortable.
She said USC is still working to make sure that there are enough bathrooms for all genders. I'm Hillary Jackson for Annenberg Radio News.
Warm temperatures are returning to Southern California this week. Today kicked off the heat, warming us up for Wednesday's high of 85 degrees. Meanwhile, Thursday is a certified beach day with temperatures rising to 94 degrees, and Friday tops off the week at 96 degrees.
Later on Annenberg Radio News, PayPal and eBay will split into separate companies starting in 2015. What can businesses expect from the split? Los Angeles County has the largest number of military veterans in the county, a new report released today by USC shows that veterans are not prepared to return to civilian life, Priyanka Deo reports.
Two-thirds of veterans have trouble adjusting to everyday life when they leave the military. That's according to the state's Secretary of Veteran Affairs, Peter Gavitt. And that's why the USC School of Social Work conducted a study to find out why so many of the country's veterans are struggling.
LA County has more veterans than any other county in the nation, and LA City has more veterans than any other city in the nation. So the needs assessment is going to go a long way of addressing those needs.
The study surveyed more than 1,350 veterans in LA County. Anthony Husson, a veteran himself, stressed the importance and relevance of the study.
The data tells us that it's time to be bold. It's time to be forward-thinking, both in Los Angeles and across the country. The status quo isn't going to do anymore. It's not okay to do what we've been doing, obviously. There are some serious issues here.
One of the main issues surrounding veterans, according to the study's lead author, Carl Castro, is that veterans enter civilian communities with more than one issue to deal with.
Veterans leave the military with a wide range of issues that they could use support on: employment, housing, health care, finances, some unfortunately legal issues. The key finding is the vast majority of veterans, or separating service members, do not have a job when they leave the military. A majority of veterans do not have permanent housing when they leave the military, and a significant number of veterans who leave the military have unmet health care needs, both physical and psychological.
Each year, about 12,000 veterans return to LA County. Authors want the military to expand the transition programs, which helps veterans find jobs and housing in their communities. Currently, 80% of veterans leave the military without a job, and 40% are not sure of their housing. Although not all veterans need help, Husson says that it is an important step to reach out to those that do.
I should note that many of my fellow veterans transition just fine. I'm okay. There's a lot of guys and gals who aren't okay. So I'm not here to say that we're all broke. I want that on the record. Veterans are not all broke, but let me tell you, there's a lot of them who are struggling. And if we can reduce that suffering and we can prevent death, we're doing our job.
The study's authors hope that the data can be used to help veterans ease their transition back home. Priyanka Deo, Annenberg Radio News.
eBay announced this morning it will split from PayPal. Both will now operate as independent trading companies. Professor Kyle Mayer from USC's Marshall School of Business explains why the split is happening and what it means. So as I understand it, they will now operate as two independently traded companies. But what exactly does that mean?
Well, basically it means that rather than eBay owning PayPal and PayPal operating as a division of eBay, being run for, you know, the overall benefit of both parties rather than the individual maximized value of either one, that now PayPal will be free to do as it sees fit to maximize its own value.
Why are they splitting, and ultimately who is this more beneficial for?
Well, at the end of the day, I think this benefits both. So back in 2002, I believe, when eBay purchased PayPal, you know, eBay was, you know, massively growing. They were doing very well. PayPal was smaller, and having control of the company who processed most of their financial transactions made some degree of sense as they were growing. But over time, it's now been 12 years, a lot has occurred, And basically, PayPal at this point is growing very rapidly, and they're in a very good market position, but they're also facing a lot of competition. Now PayPal is free to compete as they see fit in their market. At the time of the transaction when eBay purchased PayPal, eBay was clearly the dominant player. PayPal was clearly the smaller, you know, number two in this transaction. Well, now fast forward 12 years, and roughly they're pretty close to 50-50 in terms of revenue, in terms of value here. So PayPal has actually grown in many ways faster than eBay. Joint ownership creates additional layers of bureaucracy, additional layers of management, additional, you know, controls. Why do you want that? Since there are clearly costs to having two organizations under one roof, what's the corresponding benefit to that? And I think in this case, the question of benefit had just, you know, there was benefit 12 years ago, but a lot of that benefit had kind of, I think, dissipated over time. It always comes down to one simple question you have to ask. Is the whole more than the sum of the parts? It needs to be in order to justify the two being together. And I think that was probably true of eBay and PayPal 12 years ago. I'm not entirely sure that that's true today.
What is the split to do for both of those brands?
So I think this will only help the PayPal brand, I would think, because now they can think about, okay, blank slate, what do we want to do to maximize the value of this company? And I think that will only enhance their brand and give them the opportunity to transform the brand a little bit. I think they're potentially moving it into more mobile, doing some different things with it. They're going to be going hard into the mobile space and trying to do what they can to, you know, grow more internationally, because you've got some big international players, Alibaba and others, who play in that sphere. And certainly, you know, PayPal has an international presence. They're going to continue to try to grow that. And I think you're going to see the same thing from eBay. eBay has had some good acquisitions over the years in terms of different kind of companies, StubHub and others. And I think they're going to continue to try to grow in the online space and kind of figure out how much of an auction house they want to be as they kind of move more slowly towards this hybrid auction house online retailer.
That was Professor Kyle Mayer from the Marshall School of Business. Today is the fifth day of protests in Hong Kong streets, where students say they are leading a revolution. A revolution to get what they were already promised. Carrie Poppy talked to former Chinese residents about their reactions to the news.
For nearly 20 years, Hong Kong has been waiting for democracy. When Hong Kong switched hands from the UK, the Chinese government promised it the right to elections in 2017. Now the government says those leaders must be vetted by a Chinese committee, prompting thousands of people to flood the streets in protest. Clayton Duby of the University of Southern California's U.S.-China Institute Thanksgiving Hong Kong democracy is good for both sides.
Ultimately, what the Chinese government is after is a stable government. Allowing for direct election might be one way to accomplish that.
Yvonne Luo is from China and now studies at USC. She says when the news broke, she worried about her friends in Hong Kong.
I was just concerned about the condition of the students, how the government is trying to calm down the students.
Duby says we shouldn't expect an easy resolution to this dispute.
My guess is that the demonstrations occurring now are not the last part of this dance.
Los Angeles has the third largest population of Chinese Americans, according to the 2012 U.S. Census. Carrie Poppy, Annenberg News.
The number of Americans who smoke is going down. Today, it's all about living healthy, and smoking doesn't quite fit in. So most small cigar and tobacco shops have closed down one by one. In this sound portrait, we visit one of the oldest in town, Kramer's Pipe and Tobacco Shop in Beverly Hills.
Our store opened in 1949. My parents opened it. They were from Chicago, and they came out here, and they loved California, loved the weather. And my dad had a tobacco store in Chicago. So they decided to move here, and they opened this store in 1949. He built all the fixtures in it, too, all the counters that are knotty pine my dad built. He ran it for 25 years till he passed away, and my mom lived another 25 years, and she passed away in 1999, and she ran it pretty much herself, except when I could help. And now my husband and I have continued it. There used to be a butcher shop on this street, and there was a, you know, a knitting store and a photography store, and, you know, so now it's all fancy, and I think lost a lot of the charm. $8.85. Just a tradition. I don't smoke, so But I blend my father's old pipe blends. He started blending tobacco in 1950, I would say, and he's got like 7 private blends, house blends. Well, the most popular, it's the strongest, it's the fullest one, is called Father Dempsey. Pipes themselves are pieces of art. I mean, they can be inexpensive ones too, but when you get into a handmade pipe, they're really like a piece of art. And I meet these people from all over the world who are pipe carvers, and they're artisans. So that's really lovely, I think.
Sine Larson prepared that sound portrait.
Are life detours part of the journey, or are they just mistakes? In part 3 of Professor Confessionals, arts journalism director and professor Sasha Annawalt revealed that to her, they might actually be the same thing.
I'm an associate professor at USC. I am the director of a master's program in arts journalism. I don't know how I got here. I really don't. It's just the strangest thing that out of the kind of work that I do, I was able to become these titles. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to say is the interesting idea and notion of detours and thinking about detours in your life is actually there's sort of the journey and then there's the detours. But maybe they're the same thing. If I look back, I'd say, I definitely have certain feelings that I am where I was always going to go, but I don't really even still to this day know what that is. You know, I think in a funny kind of way that you can be your own worst enemy if you have a set of expectations for yourself and you're not meeting them. You know, if you aren't married when you wanted to be married and you don't have that job locked down when you wanted to have that job locked down and you're not measuring up to your own ideas of where you should be, I think that that's when you get into trouble. I think that if, you know, you can kind of say each day is this moment in time, and it's part of this larger picture, which you can't ever possibly know, I actually think you are headed in a certain direction, particularly if you can be very honest with your passion and with what it is that you love doing and how do you like to live that one day. And partly this is why I love journalism. I really don't know what's going to happen every single day. We don't know what we mean to each other. And we don't know what each day is. And I love that. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one who compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. Though I know I'll never lose affection.
Detours reporter Kristen M. Deutsch brought you this report.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
So I'm in Union Station for commuting. It's excellent. It should be extended at night so people can get home from events. You don't have to park if you take the metro. That's a plus. You don't have traffic.
The train is consistently available and therefore convenient.
Sonic City!
Now we check in with Mark Selinger to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thank you, Rocky. We have more reaction to the surprise announcement today that Elizabeth Garrett, the Vice Provost of USC, is leaving USC. She's going to become the President of Cornell, making her the first President of Cornell.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mark.
That's it for this Tuesday with Tiffany Walton.
I'm Rocky Natha.